We're back on Downtown Wednesday Afternoon Edition. Rich Kimball here. Bruce Pratt joining us for this week's Sports Lit 101. And we're happy to welcome to the program a gentleman we've talked about his work, and we'll get to talk with him about it today. He is a former poet laureate of the city of Portland. He's the executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. And his second book is out now called Deke, Dangle, Dive. Gibson Fay LeBlanc joins us. Gibson, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Gibson, one of the reasons I was so excited when I read this collection is that we talk a lot about sports poetry on this show, but it's the humanity of the and the scope of this collection that really caught me. I really love what Betsy Scholl had to say about it, our mutual friend. There is a real bracing sense of language here. How did you meld hockey and I know that it's about many other things and that language so well? What do you think you had to do to make that work?
You know, it's a great question. I think that I, hockey is such a physical game, and actually poetry is a physical game too, or it can be, you know, and the poets that I love are the ones where when you read the lines, you feel it in your body, you feel something happening, you know, and certainly that's so I sort of stumbled into it. I wrote this first hockey poem, the one that's set in a locker room that happens early in the book. And I thought, oh, that was fun. You know, that's that was the only time I'll do that. And then I started to I did a few more, and then I realized I could use hockey as a way to talk about these other themes that are in the book. My brother and parenthood and other things, mortality, but that physical language, the language of action and reaction and bodies, that felt really important to have this be that be in the book.
I thought it was fascinating too. We think of sport as a something we get something from, but that thing we get is often hardware or recognition or some sort of extrinsic motivation. But your book operates at a different plane, and the poems tell us about how sport can be used as a way to deal with the everyday issues of life, with loss, with frustration, with a number of things that every person has to deal with.
Yeah, and I think that's something I've realized as I got older, right? I mean, I played lots of sports as a kid, and certainly hockey was one of them, and definitely cared a lot about winning and losing and felt all those losses like anybody. But as I've gotten older, I've realized how much joy I get out of the game. I still play a couple times a week, and it is a way to, you know, it's not about the wins and losses. It's about, keeping playing. It's about showing up on Tuesday and Thursday mornings with a bunch of other people in Portland and putting the pads on. So,
yeah, one of the things I was thinking about is I haven't been able to play for over a year because the Alphonse, the place where I play, and we haven't been able to play there. Is that separation made me really think what it would be like to be your brother and not be able to play and still have in his heart and his mind that game. I thought the way you explored that was just extraordinary. I we talk about a lot of poetry books on the show, and we really have, but I thought that no sports poem had dug quite that deep. Well, Kevin Carey too, maybe, but that deep into the way that sport at some point plays out for us. It's over. There comes a time when sports is no longer something we can do, and mortality and being a dad. When you look forward from all the things you've written, where do you sort of see your own trajectory with hockey going?
I hope to play as long as I can. And I think, you know, if you can, the thing about hockey is if you can sort of adjust the way you play as you go, then maybe you can keep playing. But also, one never knows, right? I mean, I have lots of friends who can't play anymore, and that is hard. Yeah, it's hard because it's a joyful game, or can be. And so I hope to. I my goal is to keep playing as long as I can. And I've in the last decade, say, I definitely changed the way I play. In order to try to make that happen, you know, and I want to just be able to keep getting out there. And I do play with guys, you know, I think of guys who have, you know, two artificial hips and they're still getting out there, you know. You learn to play, you know, a different way. I still play with my sons too, and I can't really keep up with them anymore. But I have, you know, I do have some middle-aged guy, you know, wiles that I can use.
You bet.
Right, but you play like someone who has to get up and go to work the next day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How does continuing to play inform your life as a writer?
Yeah, I mean, because I see writing as a similar activity in a lot of ways. It's a practice. It's something that I do. You know, sure, it's great to publish a book. It's great for people to hear your work and be moved by it and respond to it. I love all that stuff. But ultimately, like, I do it for the day-to-day joy of it and the way it helps me pay attention to the world and to myself.
One of the poems that really resonated with me was Hockey Dad, and part because I read it, this is just serendipitously, I had just spoken to Ben Gitte a couple of days before about coaching his kids and what it was like to be a hockey dad when you're the hockey dad on the rink that knows everything the other hockey dads don't know because you played at every and excelled at every level. And he said, yeah, it's amazing. He says, the guys that know the least talk the most. You know? And I thought about, we always have this image of the hockey mom, you know, and my friend Angie Abdu wrote a whole book about being a hockey mom. But a hockey dad, I think, often takes on a different kind of image in people's minds. And I wondered if you'd have time to read that, if you have that there or.
I do. Yeah, sure. I've got it right here. Charles, I'll read it.
Thank
hockey,
you.
Hockey dad. Once you have ice blocks for feet, icicle fingers, and a lump in your throat to tremble your body with cold tomorrow, you doubt the sanity of waking at 5, the 8-year-old on ice by 6, blades carving shapes you can't name. And when your boy looks through his coach's face on the bench with red cheeks, a fire in each wooded eye, and complains about tripping, that number 16 with the black mask says, I'll chop him down next time, you doubt this game. At the hour you venture into the warm room to thaw out your spine and hear a father break down his son's backhand highlight spinner in a voice loud enough for all to hear, you know the annual backyard ice sheet was a bad idea. But also remember all those hours with your friends and brother, legs pushed until muscles wailed, then sang, knocked down, scrambling up again, skating the last tenths off the clock, down, up, bearing each sore ounce, each breath, and every sinew, humbling yourself to the rules of a game and the flawed eyes of a referee, and then ask, is this such bad training for what is to come?
Yeah, one of the things I love about the way that poem ends is that is really, you don't have to go out and editorialize about what sport can teach us. And we've heard so many people give us all the wrong answers to that. What can sport teach us? I thought that did a remarkable job of doing just the opposite.
Yeah. And I mean, it just comes out of, out of experience. And, you know, it's hard to watch your kids, you know, struggle with their tempers and struggle with bad referees and losing, and that stuff's all hard. But, you know, looking back on it, it teaches its lessons that are really important. Yeah, I think those are in the poem.
We're talking with Gibson Faye LeBlanc here on Downtown. Gibson, from your perspective, what are the dual meanings of the three words in the title of the book?
Yeah, I wanted the book to have these hockey words in the title. And Deke was the first one, and this idea of a fake is a great hockey word. But also, you know, writing and poetry are filled with fakes and filled with, you know, moments where you think the writing is going one way and then it cuts another way. That's there. And then dangle, you know, is similar, you know, dangle, if you dangle somebody, you really show them the puck and then you pull it away. And, you know, say, similarly in life and in poetry, you know, that's often what happens to us. What we think is going to happen is not necessarily what happens. And then that last word, dive, came in at the end, you know, and in thinking about watching my brother go through a long illness, thinking about the meaning of that word in hockey, which is this, you know, negative connotation of, oh, you know, that guy took a dive, you know, he faked that he was, you know, trying to draw a penalty on the other team. And, we all age, we all die, you know, that's a reality that we face. And I, you know, sort of faced it in an accelerated way, watching my brother go through that. And so, finding those three words, those three words together came very late in the process of putting the book together. But it did feel right when we got there.
Yeah. I next time I teach a class, I'm telling you, I'm going to talk about Deke and the moment that a poem turns, because I think that's the best image I've ever heard for it. And I think of all the times I've come up with other things that I thought were pretty good. No, it is really a Deke. It's when you think you're going one way and it goes another. And I think that throughout the book, your poems do that just magnificently. There's so many times I'm thinking, where's he going? And then I go, I take a deep breath. And I'm so delighted you could be with us. I really mean that very sincerely. It's a great collection. And I hope that all of our listeners will go out and get it. It's from Cavan Carey Press. You can look that up, CavanKerry. They publish great poets. We've had others on. And Gibson, just thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for all the kind words about the book.
That's Gibson Faye LeBlanc, Deke Dangle Dive, here on Downtown. Sports Lit 101 at 4:44. What's coming up next week on Sports Lit?
Next week on Sports Lit, we're going to talk about a book that made me laugh out loud the whole way through. It's only 135 pages long. It's long been out of print, but you can still find it, called The Black Bonspiel of Willie McCrimmon. It was a book that Jamie Dopp, who's been on the show a number of times, turned me on to. It is the most hysterical takeoff on the Faust deal with the devil you've ever heard, and it has to do with curling. It's hysterical.
Love it. Can't wait to hear all about it next Wednesday afternoon right here on Sports Lit 101.